Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Well, we say a good morning. Sometimes you and I, behind the scenes, and I'm glad I don't have the cameras rolling all the time, we get to talking and forget the business of the day, don't we? Good morning, Dr.
Good History. Morning, Zeb.
How are you?
I'm good. A little cold wind out there today, but hey, it's spring. We're all right.
Yeah, last week we talked about where I was, actually, in Arizona.
Right.
And I wanted to find out, where are we headed this week?
We're going to go to Texas.
Oh, my goodness. What part?
Well, you'll just have to listen.
Well,
because
we're going to
start in Texas.
Okay.
Let me put it that way. How's
all right.
that?
All right.
Okay. So, the great cattle drives from Texas north, you know, across the plains, produced one of the nation's most endearing folk heroes, the cowboy.
Yeah, the birth of the cowboy.
His sombrero, his lariat, mounted on a half-broke Mustang that probably half the time bucked him off.
Which weren't half-broke most of the time.
That's right. But, you know, in the era of the long drives from the 1860s to the 1890s, the cowboy was a legendary figure. I mean, a glamorous guy.
And still is today.
Yes, yeah.
You know what? I learned this when I did the Olympics in 1996. The American cowboy, the cowboy hat and the boots and everything, is revered, and everybody wants to be around a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't you? I mean, but you know, trailing cattle was not new, actually. Americans had, quote, walked cattle to market for more than two centuries. Although the herds were small, they were easily handled by men on foot. A boy led a belled ox down the road, and the cattle followed. In other words, folks, a belled ox would be an ox with a bell around its neck. A few men on foot brought up the rear to keep them from straying, and they traveled through farming country and placed the cattle in fenced pastures each night. There was no need for night herding, no danger of stampedes. Fat cattle had been walked from Springfield, Massachusetts to Boston as early as the 1650s. By the early 19th century, cattle were regularly driven from the Ohio Valley to markets as far away as New York City. So, again, you think of that, there's nothing really glamorous or captivating about these early cattle drives or the men that made them. It wasn't really all that exciting. But, you know, as the hide hunters decimated the buffalo herds in the next decade, there were millions of longhorns from South Texas that would take their places. Now, other cattle entered the northern plains from Oregon and Utah, and, you know, farm cattle were shipped from states east of the Mississippi River, and the brief era of the open range and the free grass generated probably the greatest cattle boom in world history. So, as we get into this, you know, the age of the great cattle drives was one where there's a lot of changes in American life.
And it was really a short period of time.
It really was.
Yeah.
Now, Eastern factories developed or enlarged during the Civil War. They supported a growing population and contributed to the demand for beef.
Yeah.
More and more people wanted beef.
Yeah.
Now, the railroads pushing west across the plains, they eventually provided transportation for the live cattle to the packing plants in Chicago, St. Louis, and then once they got refrigerated rail cars and ships introduced, then the dressed beef cattle could be hauled really across the Atlantic in the 1870s.
When did that start, do you know?
About the 1870s is what it says.
Refrigerated?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
But the invention that had the most revolutionary impact on the cattle kingdom was the barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
And us folks out here, we call it bobbed.
And it would
bobbed
have,
wire.
It caused a lot of trouble.
It was actually invented in the 1870s. And in 1876, one of the skeptical Texas cowmen in San Antonio, he wondered if that wire would hold the longhorns.
Yeah.
You know, would it really hold them in? Well, anyway, after it, that age of the pioneer cowman was kind of doomed. The wise cowmen began buying land by the section and enclosing it with barbed wire. And the severe drought of 1883 forced many cowmen to seek other grass and water. When they found fences in their way, they got kind of mad about that. And there was actually a fence war that raged off and on for several years before the Texas Rangers put an end to fence cutting.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, most states back in, and territories back in the 1860s and 70s, whether it was Kansas or whether it was Wyoming or Texas or whatever, there were a lot of battles fought over
there. There was, yeah. In fact, in 1879, fencing became a problem in Wyoming for the big outfits. In 1883, the Secretary of the Interior authorized settlers, now get this, Ed, settlers, to destroy fences that were in their way to land that they wanted to homestead.
And that caused a lot
even
of problems.
More problems. Yeah.
Yeah, really.
And 2 years later, Congress outlawed fences on federal lands, and President Grover Cleveland ordered them removed. I don't quite understand that, but
yeah.
The northern ranchers gradually purchased and fenced the ranges, although the free grass era lasted longer in parts of Montana. I mean, you know, you've been through Montana, big sky country, obviously. But the six-shooter and the repeating rifle were inventions that helped convert the central and northern grasslands from the buffalo range of the Plains Indians to a major part of the cattle kingdom because of killing off the buffalo.
Right.
So, anyway, the rapid spread of the cattle ranges occurred as millions of surplus animals were herded north from Texas. The oldest of the northern routes was the Shawnee Trail from San Antonio past Austin, Waco, and Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the routes which followed most of the stock cattle reached the northern ranges were on the Chisholm Trail to central Kansas and the later Western Trail to Dodge City. And of all the Texas cattle routes, the Chisholm Trail was the most used and by far the best known. And its name, and now this may surprise some people, its name came from Scott Cherokee Indian trader Jesse Chisholm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who in 1865 began hauling trade goods in wagons from his post near the future site of Wichita, Kansas, to Indian camps about 220 miles to the south. And other parts of the trail were at first called by various names, but Texas trail men soon applied Chisholm's name to the entire route from San Antonio to Abilene and later Kansas shipping points.
I have a question.
Okay.
How many times during the course of the year, because of the weather, could they have trail drives on any respective trail? And the reason I ask that question to you is that the first one that gets a chance to go gets all the grass.
Exactly.
And the damage left by when you've got 4,000 or 5,000 head of cattle, you're going to have a lot of damage to the grass, etc. And how many times during the course of the year could herds go up these respective trails? I'm thinking I've heard no more than three.
I would guess, I'm going to say two of most of the time,
yeah.
Maybe three, but I'm going to give you folks a map of the trails. Okay, so we're going to start. If you can picture in your mind, central United States, starting in Texas. Okay, the first trail I'm going to mention is the Goodnight Loving Trail.
Yeah.
All right. Now it started in Fort Worth. It went west up through New Mexico and north to Denver. And actually, that was the shortest one. Okay, the next one was what they called the Western Trail. It started in San Antonio, went north through Kansas, Nebraska, eastern Wyoming, to Miles City, Montana. And that actually was the longest one.
Well, no, okay.
Let me,
yeah,
there's two more.
Ahead.
Okay, now the Chisholm Trail also started in San Antonio, and it went north through Fort Worth to Kansas, Abilene, and up to Ellsworth. Okay, now the fourth trail is called the Shawnee Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it also started in San Antonio, went up through Dallas, up to Kansas City, Quincy, Illinois, and on up to St. Louis. So there were really four main trails, but, you know, all the major trails were broad and general. And, you know, we picture these narrow lanes and what you just mentioned, they spread out over a long distance.
That's
to
right.
Have the feed.
That's
and
right.
The water.
That's right.
And also, what is not mentioned on my map here is that there were a lot of what they call feeder trails.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you might have some coming from up in Mexico, the
right.
East or west, and they'll
right.
Join up with these trails and go on up through the same trail.
Well, see, a lot of the problems that happen on trail drives in the Old West with the cattle also were incurred by people on the Oregon Trail moving to Oregon because they couldn't find the forage for their livestock after another party had already preceded them.
Exactly. That's exactly right, yeah. Now, when only a few herds were following a trail, they usually found enough forage close by. But like you said, with many herds on the move during the season, the later ones had to travel parallel to the tracks of the early ones to be able to find enough grass. And then the drying up of streams and water holes, this also caused variations in the route, because if you probably had a guide out in front of you, and if the stream or river was dried up, you'd have to head either east or west to try to get to cattle.
And you're talking about maybe 4,000 or 5,000 head of the most obnoxious cattle ever on the face of the earth.
Yeah. Now, the Chisholm Trail was widely known by name, and the name was often applied kind of indiscriminately to any route cattle might follow out of Texas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But most of the men who used the trail probably had never heard of Jesse Chisholm or his wagon road. Many thought it was named after the Texan John Chisholm, and that's a name that is more widely known. And he did trail cattle to New Mexico, and some people even today restrict the use of the name Chisholm to the part of the trail that he actually used. So there's a little discrepancy there, but no one really knows, after all, how the Shawnee Trail got its name. But for two decades, trail bosses, cooks, and cowboys followed the Longhorns up the Chisholm Trail, unaware they were creating a, quote, legendary West that would long outlive the open range and the cattle kingdom. But, you know, the Texas had been a land of cattle and horses ever since the Spaniards came in the 17th century. So Texas was a big cattle area for a couple hundred years.
Yep.
And the Anglo-Americans arriving in Texas after 1800 actually found thousands of Spanish cattle and wild horses just roaming free. And the Anglos also brought livestock, which mixed with the native stock, to produce the Longhorns of South Texas. So they're kind of a mixed breed, really. But the Longhorns were, you know, they were robust, many colors, black, red, roan, white, yellow, and various combinations.
And all dangerous.
They were. You know, they were what they say, long of leg and hard of hoof, which was perfectly adapted to the region. They were able to travel for grass and water. They were able to defend themselves against predators, which sometimes involved a cowboy on foot.
That's right.
They had developed an immunity to the tick fever that proved fatal to other cattle, but unfortunately they carried the ticks wherever they went.
Yeah.
So the Longhorns of the brush country were as wild or more difficult to stalk and kill than deer or buffalo, and they roamed in scattered bands.
Weren't there a lot of the settlers along the trails that absolutely almost came to violence to stop the cattle from getting anywhere near their property because of the spread of the ticks?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they were sometimes quarantined to not come into certain areas.
Yeah.
Now, not all Texas cattle were Longhorns, nor were all immune to the tick fever. The cattle of Central and North Texas, which were a mixture of actually Shorthorns that were brought from the east or south and mixed with the native or Spanish stock, and they were susceptible to the disease. And like the Longhorns, they easily became wild and difficult to handle, even dangerous. And Anglos actually brought thoroughbreds and quarter horses, and both were crossed with little Mustang mares to produce these larger and faster cow horses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a quarter horse, I mean, today we think of the quarter horse as the real cow horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for many years, however, the Mustang cow pony and the Longhorn were inseparable elements of the Texas cattle industry, and together they made the era of the long drives possible. Now, so let's head after the Civil War, okay? Texas was the source of cattle. Now, before the war, and I didn't realize this, Zeb, but there were five civilized tribes of Indian territory that raised and exported thousands of cattle to states to the north and the east. The Cherokee.
That's right.
The Choctaw.
Yep.
The Chickasaws, the Creeks, and the Seminoles had learned open range raising and trailing livestock to the southern frontier. So I don't think people realize that cattle drives actually may have even really started with
Indian
tribes.
I think I read a
book.
I'm trying to look here on my shelves right now about a book that was written about the Indian nations that actually knew more and had started the cattle business more so than what we know of it coming out of Texas.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But the cattle the tribes brought to Indian territory were apparently of good quality, and according to people at the time, they said they were good, they attained a good size, they were, you know, a good beef animal. Now, by 1847, a regular trade had developed with buyers from Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. And during the Civil War, there was a lot of looting of the herds of the Indian Territory. The depleted herds were gradually rebuilt after the war to about 700,000 in 1884. So the herds just kept growing bigger and bigger. But anyway, the Spaniards had trailed Texas cattle to Louisiana and northern Mexico in the 1700s. So clear back then, there were cattle drives by the Spaniards.
Yeah.
Now, in the 1830s, the Anglo cowmen drove small herds to New Orleans, and in the following decade, they trailed cattle to Missouri, Ohio, and a lot of people don't think of this, but actually over to California. And actually, Zeb, right here where we are...
I was going to say, we're a part of that.
Yes, right through here along the Snake River,
yeah.
There were cattle drives that went from here over to... over into the Oregon area.
You know, one thing I was going to mention, and I don't want to take a lot of time, is one of the best movies that typifies and shows what the life was on the cattle drive was a movie that was simply titled Cowboy, and it starred Glenn Ford and Jack Lemmon, and that went all the way up to the Chicago stockyards.
Okay.
Very good movie.
You know, by 1842, many men drove herds across the Indian Territory for sale to the army contractors who supplied the forts. They were fairly profitable years for some of the Texas cowmen.
What were the cattle worth then? They weren't.
It depends, because there were sometimes they weren't worth anything because there were too many of them.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly how
but
much.
When
they
sold them for beef, I mean the prices weren't enormous.
I would say like $17 a head.
Really?
Yeah, 15 to 17. Yeah. But by the early 1850s, the Texans trailed Arkansas, like say all the way to Iowa. Hundreds of longhorn steers were sold to freighters and farmers, actually to be worked as oxen. You know, if you were a farmer, a homesteader, a good team or two teams of oxen was pretty important.
Yeah, go ahead and train them.
Yes. I had an uncle that did that. He actually had to train two of them. But anyway, Kansas City became a market for Texas beef, and some Texas cattle were trailed onto Chicago. The Texans also trailed cattle to the California mining regions.
Yeah.
And in 1856, near San Antonio, a herd of 400 steers heading west under a crew of 25 men, all mounted on, get this, Zeb, all mounted on mules. Okay? Okay. Now, most of the riders were working for their keep and transportation to get out to the gold fields. There were 5 or 6 months on the trail, but a steer costing $14 in Texas brought $100 in California.
Whoa, so, they wanted their beef.
Yeah. So in the early days of the cattle trailing, oxen hauled carts or wagons that carried the bedding, the supplies, cornmeal, bacon. If an ox went lame, the men roped a steer or yoked it to the wagon. But that was fun. The food supplied was never adequate, and the men usually had nothing to eat but beef.
Yeah. So, and by the way, do you know who designed the first chuck wagon?
I want to say Loving or...
No, Goodnight? Charlie Goodnight.
Goodnight, yeah.
Charlie Goodnight.
Yeah. You know, before the Civil War, most trail herds numbered only a few hundred cattle with four riders for each 100 cattle. The men usually had only two or three horses apiece, and these were often thin, sore-backed. And before the drive ended, these horses were, about shot, really. And without tents or raincoats, the cowboys were at the mercy of the elements day and night. I mean, it was not a glamorous
the rattlesnakes.
4 or 5 months, you know.
Yeah.
But the Shawnee Trail became hazardous for trail men and their herds even before the Civil War, because of an outbreak of the Texas fever in Missouri killed thousands of cattle.
That's right.
And here's something a little interesting: the disease was correctly attributed to the arrival of the longhorns from Texas, but the trouble was blamed on the longhorns' breath. Okay? They thought that the breathing of the longhorns infected the cattle rather than on the ticks that carried the disease. So the Missouri legislature banned Texas cattle, and Missouri farmers turned back Texas herds the next year.
Yeah.
But it was the disease that was carried by a tick. So when the trailing cattle resumed after the Civil War, some Anglo cattlemen were not particular about those animals that were in the herds, and rustlers became active as the value of cattle rose. And on one occasion, some Northwest Texas cowmen caught up with a thief who was driving off their cattle, and they ate supper with him and then announced that they were intended to hang him. Now, I'm just going to finish with this little quote, all right?
Go ahead.
So they're going to hang this guy. Okay, got the picture. He's a thief. And so here's what he says. "Boys," he said, "I'll not argue with you. I'll not deny my guilt or ask for mercy. You know me and I know you. I want at least one honest man to have a part in my hanging. Now I want the one of you who never stole a cow to step forward and put the noose around my head." A moment of shocked silence followed then laughter. They let him go with the warning. Other cow thieves did not get off so lightly when caught, but most were never apprehended.
There you go. We have a caller with a quick question.
Okay.
Caller, it's got to be short. I've only got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Well, it's not a question. This is Dick Anderson at Albion. My granddad came up to one of those trails for a fellow named John Day, and they trailed a bunch of, they were yearling heifers when they started, to John Day, Oregon. It would have been 1874.
Wow.
And they wintered right here somewhere close along the river the first year, and then went on to John Day the next year.
You know, we ought to do, and I thank you for your call. Good to hear from you, my friend. And we'll do a little research. I'd like to do more on the cattle drives that went through this country, Dr.
You know, I really didn't get through this. So we're going to do another part on the cattle.
You know, I appreciate his calling because, you know, there's so much that we overlook. Idaho had a lot of trail drives going through it. Why don't we finish with this next week and maybe even elaborate a little bit on it, talking about the chuck wagons, talking about the gear the cowboys had back in those days. And I think it'd be interesting.
Okay. Yeah, we'll continue with the cattle drives.
That's all that I know about. My granddad, he did come back here and become sheriff. He's the one that went and got Diamond Field Jack.
That's right.
Yuma, Arizona.
Well, I tell you, sir, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. God bless you. I'm out of time, so I got to run, but call again. I appreciate it. Thank you. You know, that's interesting. We got people that live here that know the history.
Yeah.
And that what makes the program even more interesting.
It is.
I got to run. Thank you. Excellent job.
Thank you, Zeb.
All right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.